From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
For Hillary Clinton, we give you Hillary's lifelong friend, Betsy Eberling.
Hello, fellow Democrats, on this historic, wonderful day. This one's for you, Hill. 98 votes. Yes.
I was honored to be in the president's booth, and he was clearly moved by Michelle Obama's speech.
You know, if people want to take it as a vote for Trump, okay. But you know what? This is me walking out from corruption.
She knocked it out the park, and I was still undecided, but after today, she knocked it out the park.
I wouldn't run away from any job that would put me in a position to solve problems, and our state has a lot of problems.
It's a tough job. I mean, let's not, you know, but it's not an impossible job.
But regardless of whether I run for another office any time in my life, I am outraged by what I see in our state.
The eyes of the nation were on Philadelphia this week as Hillary Clinton claimed the Democratic nomination for president. But among the Illinois delegation in Philly, a lot of eyes were looking back home as Democrats look ahead to the campaign for governor in 2018. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. With me in studio in Springfield is Kent Redfield. He's an emeritus professor of political science at the University of Illinois Springfield and a longtime observer of Illinois politics. And joining us on the line from Philadelphia, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for NPR Illinois and Illinois Public Radio, and Paris Schutz, correspondent for Chicago Tonight, which airs on Chicago PBS station WTTW. Paris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So, Amanda, Paris, I'll begin with you. The view from Philadelphia among the Illinois delegation, can you give us your initial impressions, compare and contrast with your experience a week before with the Republicans in Cleveland?
Well, the Democratic delegation obviously is much bigger, and the big difference is it's high-powered public officials and elected officials that make up this delegation, whereas in Cleveland a week earlier, there was hardly an elected official to be found. Many of them were running as far from that convention as possible, and the ones that were there were ballet dancing sort of around their feelings for the nominee, and they were just kind of there to support the Illinois Party. But largely the delegation last week was made up of some grassroots people from Chicago, from the suburbs, from downstate that the Trump campaign, Kent Gray, the Illinois campaign manager, had recruited to be in the fold. So it was a different party. You had establishment Republicans and these new people kind of getting to know each other. And here in Philadelphia, it's kind of a fractured party, too. You kind of have the people that Bernie Sanders brought in, the Troy LaRaviers. He's the head of the Principals Association in Chicago, and he's a big, fierce critic of Rahm Emanuel. But he was here along with the stalwarts like Chicago Alderman Ed Burke and House Speaker Mike Madigan.
And I will say, too, that there's also just a very different feel overall at these two conventions. Both cities had police out in full force and remarked, I spoke with, you know, residents of both cities, and they both said they'd never felt so safe in their life. In terms of just sheer organization, you had just overwhelming interest to attend this convention due to, of course, it is the belief, the historic nature of Hillary Clinton's nomination. And that did go over fine, it seems, for the Illinois delegation itself. But when you got to the arena where the convention was held, a whole lot of griping, I gotta say, about the organization on the DNC, really long lines for foods, not enough water, not enough seats, people just going, and those who had credentials to be, they weren't necessarily delegates, but to be guests and sitting in the, you know, up in the rafters, wasn't even room for them. So some differences there. And also just, I mean, if you watched any of the TV coverage, I think it was apparent you had a lot more well-known music acts, celebrities that were at the Democratic National Convention than were at the Republican. So that breathes a different atmosphere.
Amanda, are you saying that Katy Perry is greater than Scott Baio?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go out on a limb there and say yes.
I am sorry I missed the Snoop Dogg concert last night here, but There's just so many options.
There
I did
really
get to see Blues Traveler at the Rahm Emanuel sponsored Chicago party on Wednesday with you, Amanda.
Yeah, there was Blues Traveler. Kesha did a concert. there was the Snoop Dogg one. Google has a brand. I mean, these are big, huge affairs, and some of that again goes on at the Republican National Convention. But it is definitely just a very different atmosphere between these 2 weeks and the two parties.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Rahm Emanuel there, because he was sort of persona non grata for a while. In fact, I don't believe his name was actually on the pamphlet advertising his party, the Chicago sort of themed party that was going on. And there was some question about, you know, I don't know if there was question about whether he'd show up, but he certainly was not given any sort of formal role or recognition the way a lot of other people of the Clinton Clinton family, extended political family going. I mean, he was a member of the Clinton administration, right?
Not only that, you know, the mayors of several big cities spoke at the convention. New York, Bill de Blasio, L.A., Eric Garcetti, and I believe Denver and Philadelphia. Mayor Rahm Emanuel did not speak. And it sort of speaks, if he did speak, he probably would have gotten booed, especially by the Bernie Sanders supporters, because his popularity nationwide, because of all the bad news that sort of the spotlight is on in Chicago, he just kind of is a... He's a toxic figure nationally, and after the Laquan McDonald video controversy, Hillary Clinton had to separate herself from him completely. He didn't appear at any campaign events that she had in Chicago. Bernie Sanders called for him to resign, so clearly because she was locked in such a tight battle, she had to separate herself from him. And Emanuel really was only here for probably a day and a half. He got in Wednesday and flew out late last night, and he spent one day at the Illinois delegation breakfast. He gave a speech, pretty generic speech, but his role certainly diminished from 4 years ago, where he did speak on the national stage, and he did say, well, to my credit, I did spend a few hours with Bill Clinton, and I was in his box, and so I'm still here, everybody. But it certainly seemed to affect him. You know, he's not the political rock star on the national stage that he was.
Yeah, Ken.
And he did make one appearance in the Obama video as being featured as somebody who was urging the president to, not go for broke on the Affordable Care Act. So
he was kind of set up as a villain almost.
Yeah, that threw him under the bus in terms of that. And so we're going to see, the attention will be on the elections this fall. Then we're going to elect a governor. But then, when we get to the mayoral election in Chicago, that is obviously going to be fascinating. We're going to, everybody's jockeying already for that.
Yeah.
So, Paris, you mentioned a couple of times now the Bernie supporters is saying that they, might have booed Rahm Emanuel. And, and Amanda, you too. I know you talked to the Speaker Madigan, who actually sort of praised the Bernie supporters in the Illinois delegation, at least. And those of us watching at home certainly heard plenty of booing and disruption, especially if it was a little harder to hear on Thursday night during Hillary Clinton's speech, although you could tell sort of if you were following it on Twitter that every time the crowd would maybe start chanting Hillary, Hillary, that they were maybe trying to drown out some of the Bernie Sanders supporters who were catcalling or booing or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about how they functioned within the Illinois delegation, and particularly as compared to some other states like California, where maybe they were a bit more aggressive in attempting to be disruptive?
Well, in the Illinois delegation, you had, kind of well-known public officials that were Bernie delegates, like Chuy Garcia, who ran against Mayor Emanuel, and Clem Ballenoff, longtime labor leader in Chicago and activist. And they embraced Hillary Clinton. They kind of took the Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders actually sent a text on Monday, because Monday was the day it really got out of hand, where Sanders supporters were booing Clinton every time Clinton's name was mentioned. And they were really loud. And we all wondered if this convention was just going to be one big giant ball of chaos. And Sanders actually sent a text to his whips, the people that were charged with whipping up the delegates to cheer and to vote on the platform and all that. And he sent a text saying, "Do not protest. This, that's not what I want. I want you to support the nominee, Hillary Clinton." And so, people like Chuy Garcia, the official people, or State Representative Will Guzzardi, they kind of saw what happened here as a victory because they moved Hillary Clinton to the left. They forced her listen to her speech last night. She talked about free college tuition. She talked about taxing Wall Street and the 1%. I mean, that's straight from the Bernie Sanders playbook. So they were really happy. They were happy to come on board the Hillary train, so to speak. And then you had others. There was a group from National Nurses United, the Union of Nurses, who were very, very outspoken activists, and they sat through the speech. And they were the ones, along with others, that held up signs saying no TPP, you know, protesting that Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. And so it was split among people who said, look, this is a victory. We got the party to move to the left versus, no, Hillary Clinton stole this from Bernie Sanders. And they were the ones that were starting to chant last night, and then the Hillary supporters would drown them out. And it was awkward in the beginning of her speech, but it seemed to go away as her speech got rolling.
Yeah, and I would say, at least from the perspective of somebody watching at home, I don't think it was nearly as apparent last night as it had been on Monday. And you know, presumably, Clinton would have been prepared for that and maybe just sort of pressed onward.
I will add, too, in those convention halls, and there was, in fact, I forget who the speaker was, but the shouting began, and he was on the stage, and he said, sorry, I don't know what you're saying. It can be really hard to actually tell when you have all of those thousands of people what on earth they're uttering. So you heard comments, but sometimes not every yell is an anti-Hillary Clinton yell, but a lot of them, of course, are. But it really can be very difficult in the arena, even when you are there. Just to add on to what Paris said, definitely agree. There is a split within the Bernie Sanders supporters, and you very much have some that are vocal about, no, we feel like this was stolen. They haven't gone far enough. Don't trust Hillary Clinton. And then there are those who say, you know, stop giving into this storyline of conflict. Those are the rare delegates. And in fact, there is a group of delegates that I spoke with that had a sign. They all sat next to one another and they had a sign. It was, Bernie delegates for Hillary.
Ken.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, the public opinion polling would show that Hillary Clinton is not losing. There's a certain faction there that in the Sanders supporters that will not support her, but it's not any larger than the drop-off that Trump is feeling in terms of traditional Republicans. The difference between the Democratic and Republican conventions is the Republican the dissatisfaction was very diffused, and there was not one kind of candidate that you could rally around the anti-Trump. And it was the dissatisfaction about Trump as an individual as much as it is about policy. This was much more, there was a focus in terms of Sanders, and then there was a policy content to this. But there certainly is a generational gap between people who are kind of first-time participants and people who have been into the process and understand what's going on. And so someone from the 60s who went through the anti-war movement, some of this was very familiar in terms of kind of the split between how people express their activism when they're kind of involved with a politics or a cause for the first time.
And it's probably worth remembering that the people who actually go to these conventions are some of the most hardcore, committed supporters. You put your name on a ballot, you're in a state with a caucus, you've gone and worked the caucus process. So these are going to be some of the most committed Democrats in this case, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Before we leave the stage in Philadelphia, Amanda, I want to talk to you about, when President Bush was at the Republican conventions 16 years ago and 12 years ago, you had a lot of Texas speakers up there. President Obama and then Senator Obama, you have a lot of Chicago and Illinois speakers who get prime platform speaking engagements. This time we did not have as many Illinoisans who actually got to speak on the big stage.
No, I think Illinois still still wants to and does, in a sense, claim Hillary Clinton, and yet it is clear that she is not a hometown girl in that regard anymore, and that was evidenced, I think, some by these speakers. As we talked about already, of course, no Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, also U.S. Senator Dick Durbin never really took the stage. You did, however, have some spotlight, national spotlight shed on Illinoisans, and more so than there was at the Republican National Convention, of course. So you look at Congressman Luis Gutierrez had a speech about immigration, and he did also speak at Barack Obama's last convention, nominating convention, but this was later, and, you know, TV cameras were on him, so Gutierrez said, yeah, this is a bigger deal. Also, Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth, who is in a race trying to unseat U.S. Senator Mark Kirk, she had a speaking role, not quite in prime time, but nonetheless, because it was on Thursday, you already had a very crowded arena at the time that she was on stage talking about an endorsement of Hillary Clinton and then also her own past as a veteran and, you know, kind of retelling the incident in which she lost her legs when her helicopter was shot down. So there was that, and then also got to mention the Illinoisans who were on stage that was a more sobering, it was not a campaign-style speech. In, for example, the mother of Sandra Bland, who was that young woman from Naperville who had been pulled over for not turning on a turn signal, ended up in a Texas jail and committed suicide there. And so you had a bunch of the mothers whose children had passed away either at the hands of, you know, violence or police, what have you, that really spurred the Black Lives Matter movement. And so an Illinois mom right there really getting a lot of national attention as well.
And the biggest star in the Illinois delegation was Betsy Ebeling, the woman that you played a clip of in the beginning, the childhood pal from Park Ridge, who read the official roll call for Clinton and then appeared in that biographical video talking about her childhood. And I wonder if the lack of, you know, public officials speaking had anything to do with the fact that Illinois was the only state in the union that went a year without a budget and still doesn't have a budget. You know, at the Republican convention, there were no speakers from Illinois. There were no speakers from Illinois 4 years ago. And I think that speaks to the lack of, there really aren't rising national stars in the Illinois Republican Party. I mean, you might have thought Aaron Schock a few years ago, but of course, we all know he had kind of a spectacular downfall. So that the Illinois Republican Party is really struggling to kind of grow big national figures, and the Democratic Party has them in Illinois. They're big names, but, you know, there aren't a lot of good things happening in the state of Illinois, in the city of Chicago, at least from a national lens right now.
This is State Week. Our panel is Kent Redfield, Amanda Vinicky, and Paris Schutz of WTTW's Chicago Tonight. I'm Brian Mackey. Well, one of the subplots in Philadelphia, for at least for those of us from Illinois, was a lot of jockeying and maybe some of the media jockeying the candidates over whether they will be running for governor. The names that I was keeping notes during the week, Dick Durbin, certainly, U.S. Senator, got a lot of attention. State Senator Kwame Raoul, the perennial interest in Attorney General Lisa Madigan, and Chris Kennedy, the shy and retiring, apparently, Chris Kennedy. Can you take us through some of the conversations that were happening around the 2018 race for governor here in Illinois?
Well, it certainly seems like it's Dick Durbin or bust right now. I mean, we entered the week knowing that the rumor was out there that people were interested in him or he may be interested. And on Monday, you had all the labor leaders that, you know, are such a big part of the Democratic delegation in Illinois begging him to run, and you had the party officials begging him to run, and he wouldn't close the door on it. And then by Thursday, he's saying, okay, you know, I'm gonna sit down after November and talk to my wife and make a decision on it. And it's, you know, but the speeches that he gave were like campaign speeches, slamming Governor Rauner at every turn, you know, kind of foaming at the mouth at his anger at what's happening in Illinois. And so then Mike Madigan revealing that they had spoken about running for governor several times. He'd clear the field if he entered the field. The party believes he's the only one that can raise the kind of money to take on Rauner. Rauner's already getting the apparatus going. He's got $15 million in the bank. And then you had Chris Kennedy, who also kind of gave a campaign style speech and that basically seemed to cry out, hey, I'm here. I want to run too. Pay attention to me. And then he ran away from reporters into an elevator and said, have you no decency, when someone tried to ask him if indeed he was going to throw his hat in the ring after it seemed so obvious that he wanted to and he was courting all the people that were here. And then Speaker Madigan said, yeah, I talked to Chris Kennedy, too, about running for governor. So those seem to be the big names. And I don't know, Lisa Madigan, I just didn't see the conviction with her. And Kwame, I think everyone's waiting to see what Dick Durbin's going to do.
Yeah, you Chicago TV reporters have some pretty sharp elbows, I understand.
Yeah, I didn't make it into the elevator, but some others did.
You know, I'll just add, I think that Chris Kennedy is perhaps seen as a big alternative, given that he would have the money to not have to necessarily fundraise, to self-fund a run against Governor Bruce Rauner, and also perhaps take that, hey, I'm a businessman, I'm a business leader for sure. Kennedy would be able to bring along his own business contingent. But I think that elevator incident really did show, perhaps to anybody that's looking, that maybe he's not quite ready for that prime time, or at least needs to adjust his expectations. When he was very indignant with questions being asked and reporters getting into an elevator, I heard, you know, hey, this is a safety issue. We're in an elevator. And it was like, well, not your elevator. And you just gave a major speech. It's not as if he was being chased down the street in front of his home and people joking that it was, they'd seen people run from cameras, run less from cameras upon indictment. We'll have to see if we hear more from Chris Kennedy, but it was clear that that speech was intended to be an introduction and to really float his name and get it out there. The Lisa Madigan thing, as Paris noted, not quite that enthusiasm or energy, I think, because she's acknowledged. She didn't say why. When asked, she said, isn't it obvious what the problems would be with her running for that office while her father is still Speaker of the Illinois House?
And she said, obviously, it would bring up issues. But I want to go back to what Dick Durbin said in one of his speeches. He said, you know, he talked about growing up in East St. Louis and then living in Springfield and raising his children there. And now, living in Chicago for the last 20 years, the greatest city in the world, in his opinion. I mean, and he hates how Bruce Rauner is dividing the state, Chicago versus Dallas State. He's basically saying, hey, I am the candidate for all of Illinois. I'm the only one that knows the entire state. I'm a Chicagoan, I'm a Springfield resident, and I'm a East St. Louis resident. I hit all the major centers of the state. So it certainly seemed like if he's not going to run, he certainly is heavily flirting with it right now. And like I said, the party's officials want him to be the guy.
And part of, you know, what he's saying, let's see, you know, wait for November, is, you know, how the world looks to him is probably significantly different if he is the number two man in the Senate with a Democratic majority and a Democratic president. He's been in a position in the majority in the Senate before. Whereas if it's a Donald Trump presidency and the Democrats are in the minority, that doesn't sound like a lot of fun. And plus, his upside in terms of, in the Senate, being passed over for the leader,
right.
he's not going anywhere. So, this could start to look very attractive depending on the dynamics.
Not only that, but, you know, he has to run for reelection as the number two, as the whip. And even if they do regain the majority in the Senate, he doesn't have the closest relationship with the Clintons. You know, there's a lot of people that say that the Clintons never forgave him for being one of the first people out of the gate to support Barack Obama 8 years ago. So I think his trajectory in Washington is flat. And the question is, he'd be 74 years old upon taking office if he were to run and win for governor in Illinois.
Yeah, and I don't know if we mentioned this. We talked a lot about Chris Kennedy a few minutes ago. He is, just to give a little biographical sketch for listeners who may not be familiar with that name, former chairman of the Illinois Board, University of Illinois Board of Trustees. He ran the company that managed the Chicago Merchandise Mart and is the son of U.S. Senator and former presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy. I want to turn now just briefly, with just a couple of minutes left in the show. Bruce Rauner, back here in Illinois this week, was on an aggressive tour of the state, talking about term limits, going to a lot of farms and places like that. This is not something – it's something he campaigned pretty heavily on a few years ago, and now here he is again, sort of re-bringing this issue up. Kent, do you have any sense of why he may be choosing this week to start going on a barnstorming tour of Illinois to talk about term limits, which, by the way, are not going to be on the ballot this fall?
Well, part of it may be the fact that the redistricting petition is in doubt, and so that may not be on the ballot. You know, this is an issue to run against incumbents, and the Democrats have got more incumbents, and, you know, he wants to make the mess in Springfield the result of the Speaker Madigan and all of the Democratic incumbents. And so this is a nice little issue that you can throw out there about how we need to make change in Springfield. And, you know, if it weren't for the Democratic legislature, Illinois would, be in tremendous shape, and these people fight me at every turn. And so we're going to see more of this, and this is just picking up one of the turnaround themes and recycling it in terms of the legislative elections.
And Paris, one of the last things I want to ask you about, not slightly different topic, is we had one of our state representatives step down this week,
right.
State Representative Ron Sandak, and he cited cybersecurity issues because people had created a bunch of, as he says, a bunch of fake accounts, and were being a little circumspect about this because the police reports have been released with many, many redactions. But
yeah, they don't really tell you anything.
Yeah, exactly. So I understand that the Democrats were at least asked about, did you guys hack state Representative Ron Sandak or something like that?
Yeah, and certainly the rumors are wild about this. I mean, any lawmaker you talk to has a different theory about what exactly happened. And Sandak was really active on social media. He Twittered constantly, Facebook constantly, and then all of a sudden he shut it down. And then all of a sudden he stepped down, you know, citing cybersecurity. And Madigan was asked a few times, what's your reaction? He says, I don't know anything about it. And did you have anything to do with it, or did the Democrats have anything to do with it? And he says, no, I don't know anything about it. So you know, at this point, Sandak is a private citizen. We may never know exactly what happened. And obviously the rumors that are out there are just rumors, so they're not worth reporting because there's just really no way to confirm it. But he is, you know, he is locked in I think, a fairly difficult battle. I believe the gentleman's name is Jose. That's running against him, the Democrat, and I think he was polling pretty close to Sandak, and now that could be a seat that theoretically the Democrats pick up. And you know, Governor Rauner's tried really hard to chip away at Speaker Madigan's supermajority, but there's real danger of growing that supermajority, or at least kind of keeping the status quo, which would really kind of put the final nail in the coffin of the turnaround agenda. Because, you know, again, from Madigan's comments this week, he's not budging on any of that stuff once the temporary budget expires in January.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. That is our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Paris Schutz of WTTW's Chicago Tonight and Kent Redfield of the University of Illinois Springfield. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.